6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast brought to you by Anna and Chris. I'm Chris, she's Anna. We're here for another week of hockey talk. And if you had been present to the conversation we had before we clicked record, you too would be a little off your game.
Yeah.
How you doing, Anna?
Once again, HR rules were violated. But anyway, we have fun. And like, speaking of having fun, we're having fun watching the Canucks right now, which we don't always get to say. But even the negative Nelly is like us.
Fairness, we've been saying this a lot this season, right? Like it's almost like, how do you solve a problem like Brock Besser or JT Miller has been replaced by this Vancouver Canucks team is fun. I can't believe it. When was the last time? And then next week we'll do the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's our new thing.
Yeah. Cause we're pinching ourselves a little bit. Like this is, you know, not uncharted territory for the team, but it's been a while.
Mm-hmm. If you've been following along to the team, you already know that Anna and I do not have any clue as to what we're talking about when it comes to prognosticating how this team will perform.
Yep.
They're getting themselves points in every game, which is unheard of, and more than getting points in every game. Since we last recorded an episode, they have gotten 2 points in every game they've played. They are 8 out of a possible 8 points. And who knows what happens at the crack of dawn tomorrow when they have to take on the Columbus Blue Jackets. But this is kind of surreal that the Vancouver Canucks are playing as well as they have been. So we'll get into that in Rewind. As well, if you happen to be a member of C4 Discord, you have to be on social media, or you just happen to be anywhere near a television set over the course of the last few days. Bruce Boudreau decided that he had some juice left over that he felt the need to spill. And he talked a little bit about our captain, Quinn Hughes, which we'll discuss. You have whether or not the Canucks are legit. We'll talk about that because who knows if they are, and a few other tidbits. But with all of that said, let's rewind the show back up. It's kind of like having a do-over, but we don't instead edit the intro so it actually makes sense. We just get into Rewind. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the Vancouver Canucks going to the Big Apple and getting themselves a 6-3 W against the Rangers.
Yeah. I mean, like, this was a big test, right? Rangers are a legit team, currently sitting top of the Metropolitan. I believe they were sitting top of the Metropolitan at the time. But either way, like a legit team. And that's a big test for the Canucks. But I would say they passed with flying colors.
Okay, I wouldn't go as far as flying colors. I mean, we did see the Vancouver Canucks commit a few party fouls against a team they should probably avoid doing such against, but they definitely pass. I mean, yeah, they give up the first goal, special teams. They take themselves a 3-1 lead into the intermission, only then to, you know, let the Rangers continue to sort of creep back over the course of the game. But you're right. The Vancouver Canucks, you know, quite clearly got themselves the W. And I would like to point out, this was the game I said they were going to win. I knew they were going to play up against the Rangers, and that they did. PD scores an empty net goal, which one is important to note that I was going to say was the game-winning goal, but no, he had actually scored a goal earlier in the game, which counted as the game-winning goal.
Yeah, and that's important to mark for your calendars of the games that followed. But yeah, like, I honestly want the lotto line continue to dominate, and we were looking at them thinking, why didn't this happen sooner? And then two, like, the strength of Nils Höglander coming, just going from strength to strength this season, continued and had some really nifty goals.
You know, and I, to point out sort of, or to maybe expand on what I have an issue with, is the Vancouver Canucks were giving up shots. We're now starting to see this happen more and more frequently against teams, and they are leaning very heavily on their goaltender, whether it be Thatcher Demko, who, spoiler alert, going to the All-Star game, and Casey DeSmith. But Demko has been up to the task, as has been DeSmith, so as long as they're continuing to get six goals in a game, what does it matter if they give up a zillion shots to the opposition, right? I think they only outshot the Rangers once over the course of the game. That was in the second period. Granted, when you spot yourself a three-goal lead on, like, a half dozen shots in the first, I think it was, what was it they had? Seven shots, so yeah.
I get what you're saying, and, like, especially when you look at who, like, got on the score sheet for the Rangers, like, you don't want to be giving up that many shots to a team like that with players like Panarin, like, that can take advantage of that. And honestly, it, like, when you see a game like the Buffalo game, that maybe gets you more worried when you're not necessarily... You can't outscore the opposition every time, right? You can't just rely on offensive firepower to get you past. So, yes, I would say that is a concern. But it was also a really fun game because it was like Canucks went toe-to-toe with a legit team, you know? Maybe a little playoff preview there.
Well, if that's the playoff preview, Stanley Cup bound we are.
Mm-hmm. Stanley Cup final. Here we go, 20 years later, 30 years later, rather.
If that were the case, don't do it to me that way. I couldn't relive a 94. So the Vancouver Canucks, they get themselves that 6-3 win against the Rangers. They go into Long Island. This is the game that I had suggested that the Vancouver Canucks were going to lose, simply because if they had to lose one of the two in the back-to-back, the Islanders was the team. That's the team they sort of not necessarily play up to. As they did the Rangers, nor do they maybe play down, but get to, you know, caught unawares. I obviously don't know hockey.
Yeah, which I guess people have suspected for a long time.
It's very true.
I mean, yeah, as like listeners will remember, I called it the other way. Like, I thought they would lose to the legit contenders in the Rangers, and then win in Long Island. On Long Island? Yeah, sure. But this kind of... this game definitely proved that the lotto line is only half the story, right? And that it's the 5-on-5 matchup of Quinn Hughes and Philip Peronic joining them that really makes them like a really crazy unit to contend with.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting dynamic that the Vancouver Canucks have right now in how they're getting scoring from unexpected places.
Sure.
Right? Like, you think about it, how is, let's say, the Canucks' third and fourth line, or second line for that matter, now that the lotto line is sort of connected, how are those three lines generating offense when very similarly constructed lines from seasons past could not? I would like you to answer this question for me satisfactorily.
I mean,
and prove, Anna, that you know hockey.
Well, I would say yes. The lotto line, like in the past, the problem was you're loading up one line and.
It's Let's the reason say why years past they wanted to split the Sedins up. No sense having such skill on one line.
But let's say now that yes, it is still a concern, especially when you're looking at the quote unquote second line, with Kuzmenko there, and you're just thinking, this isn't really good enough from a secondary scoring point of view. Obviously, that's a third line, second line, whatever you want to call it, with Bluger's line. and I will not be referring to it as the name that Daniel Wagner wants to call it. So I just think...
What did he want to call it?
He wants to call it the Good Job Boys. Garland, Joshua, Bluger.
Oh, okay. I saw the name, but I didn't understand the reference. And my wife was asking me, and I'm like, I don't know. With Vancouver Canucks history, the moment a line becomes something, you get a name, and you can't shake it.
I know. Murph did a little bit at the Buffalo intermission about like different line names over the years, Mattress Line, et cetera, West Coast Express.
I had to explain that one to my wife, and then she's like, oh, yeah, that totally makes sense.
I mean, we had some good line names over the years. Wasn't there the Amex line when it was All Americans, Higgins, Booth, and who else was on that line?
I don't know.
I forget.
I just know the name.
I was staring into Higgins' eyes the whole time, so I don't remember.
I was busy looking at those abs and wishing that I could have a set like them.
Yeah, exactly. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, just like the third line. Obviously, they're providing some decent scoring, definitely more than you'd expect from a third line. And when they're not providing scoring, they are like spending time in the opposition zone. They are winning puck battles and generally doing the work. But yeah, I think it is still a concern about secondary scoring. But to me, I'm like, the way you remedy that is expecting more from your second line and maybe giving a boost to that second line via a trade or a signing. So,
yeah. Quinn Hughes gets his 11th in this game. Why is that important? Because Dakota Joshua gets his 11th at the end of the game. If you had told me that Dakota Joshua would have 11 goals tied with Quinn Hughes, who has also 11, and that's not a knock against Quinn. Quinn's producing offense, maybe. You know, in a perfect world, we would have seen a bigger number. It's hard to complain about that. But who gets the third goal, which ultimately counts as the winner? Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, of course it's PD. And let's not forget the quality contribution of Kasparov himself, Tyler Myers. I don't think that puck has stopped moving yet. Like, hooey, that was fast. But, yeah, like... It is kind of like going to see your ex, right? It's just like you want to show that your life is better without your ex. I was
curious where you were going with it there for a moment. Life is better. Speaking of life being better, the Vancouver Canucks go into Pittsburgh so that the front office could effectively scout that roster a little bit further than they may already have over the course of the last many, many years. The Vancouver Canucks get off to a hop and start. The first period is all Vancouver for the most part. Yes, the other Pettersson scored a goal to give Pittsburgh one. But our Pettersson apparently took that as an insult and decided that he needed to get one too. Now, where this game unfortunately goes awry for the Vancouver Canucks is after... You know, what was a phenomenal first period, one is to which they go and chase a goaltender and are dominant in such a way that you don't even know that they were actually outshot by the opposition. They apparently had already started to set sights on their next opponent in upstate New York.
Yeah.
And decided to make things just a little bit interesting.
I think it's fair to say that they gave the Penguins an opportunity to get themselves back into this game, and I'm sure people will complain about the officiating, which, yeah, wasn't great in some parts. But, like, it was really the Canucks giving the Penguins an opportunity to take advantage of that. Giving Sidney and Crosby an opportunity to sell calls, as he will. Like, that's just his nature, and that's... but also giving Sidney Crosby opportunities to be Sidney Crosby, which he still is.
So, as you point out, future Vancouver Canucks Sidney Crosby scores a pair in this game. And ultimately, you know, gets Pittsburgh back into it to tie it, go to overtime late in the third. The goal itself, though, that Sid scores in the third period is a goal that you knew was coming. Like, it just felt like, even as a Canucks fan, I'm like, oh, Vancouver is just, you know, barely holding on here. Pittsburgh's going to tie it up, aren't they? They tie it up late. They go into bonus hockey, which if you were to have asked me or maybe even told me, Chris, they're only going to get a point out of Pittsburgh, I'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, I think
take a point on the road against an Eastern team. Who cares if they get two? We don't. We'll take a point. We'll get into Buffalo.
Yeah.
But then going into the game, having won the two in New York, I'm now of the mindset that I'm greedy AF. Mm-hmm. I wanted those 2 points. So who was it that scored the game winner in Pittsburgh, Anna?
Just double checking. Yeah, I think it was Elise Pettersson.
So if you're keeping track right now, Petey had the game winner against the Rangers, the game winner against the Islanders. He now has the game winner against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Gets that overtime win. Vancouver Canucks beat the Pens 4-3.
Yep, there we go. Easy as. And Pettersson just adds another million to his new deal.
Oh, just a million? I don't think there is enough money in the safe at Raj, at the Raj, sorry.
Yeah, and that's all we know. As we know, that's how the players get paid. Every Friday, they line up at the Raj and just get money counted out from the big old safe.
There's a little, you know, there's some bars, a cash. It's like a casino, you know, where they have like a someone on the other side of it, and they just, you know, they ask, you know, what do you want this in denomination of? And
yeah.
Yeah. So the Vancouver Canucks, 3-for-3. They head into Buffalo. Buffalo did not wear the Buffalo Slug retro uniform, much to my chagrin.
I didn't end up saying this, but I really love that Buffalo uni that they
You like the Buffalo wore. Slug?
No, I don't. I like the retro that they wore because I think the colors look so clean. It's only ruined when you realize that they still have the Buffalo logo on it. Buffalo logo is just ugly. Like, it looks like a Rorschach or something with swords.
So I am positive that there is some form of, you know, correlation to the saber part as far as the team is concerned. But, like, if you think from a design perspective, an artist was asked, hey, can you create a logo for us that encapsulates a team in Buffalo called the Sabres? And they're like, I got this. Let's throw a Buffalo with some Sabres. We'll put it in a circle. Bob's your uncle. Cash the check.
And I would be remiss to, like, go after a team for putting swords in their logo because my cricket team is literally, their logo is three swords. And because cricket lacks imagination, there's a team that has the exact same logo, but just upside down.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And I know there's someone here who might be like, oh, Chris, what about the Canucks logo? Hey, I got, like, the Canucks logo for me, this particular edition of it, I'm not a big fan. I think I've articulated this before. But you have to understand, the ownership group at the time that created the first version of this logo wanted to really, you know, accentuate the fact that their organization was called Orca Bay Sports and Entertainment. And what better way than having an orca from Orca Bay jump out of the ice? And if you ever saw, like, an Orca Bay Sports and Entertainment, like, logo reveal or whatever of the organization, essentially this was a stylized version of that with a C.
Yeah, because the C for Canucks, get it, but it's also an orca. I mean, I like the orca. I love the skate jersey, but for me, the skate by itself doesn't do it. Like, the skate logo.
No, and for me, the skate is more nostalgic because that's what I grew up with.
Yeah.
Right?
But to me, it's the colors that really make the skate logo, the skate jersey, rather, and that kind of stuff.
And I think, you know, credit to what they've done in Abbey, that's the jersey that maybe the Vancouver Canucks should have considered at some point. But
what, with Johnny Canuck on the front?
Yeah.
Mm.
But not, I don't mind not it for the Abbey. Not the version as to which they're using in Abbey, but I think they could have done.
I think sort of the best thing about the Abbey jersey is the A on the sleeve. The way they do that is really cool. Mm. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, like, watch more Abbey Canucks games. They're fun.
So Vancouver, Buffalo, they get underway at, like, you know, 8 a.m. or some godly time. I know it wasn't that early. It felt like it. Yeah, like when I'm watching the Canucks game on TV, my wife sits down. It's like, wait, why are they playing right now? They're in the U.S. They're playing the Sabres, whatever. Yeah. I was about to say this game was boring, but it wasn't. Like it had everything about it. If you just look at like the box score, is a boring game. I don't think any of the two teams broke double digits in a period. It was a 1-0 game, and it wasn't as if you had, you know, the goaltender standing on their head, though in fairness, Demko had too many times. Mm-hmm. But how the game sort of developed in the second period and then how it petered out in the third is weird.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I a better word for
change
it
there, but
boorish than boorish. Boring. Because it was pretty, it was chippy, right? It was not a very good-natured game.
Well, no. I mean, in the first period, you know, Vancouver Canucks got, was it the first period that, no, the second period they got 2 goals, only 1 counted. But the first period, they didn't really get any opportunity. I would say that Buffalo had maybe, had 2 scoring chances. Again, Demko played well. Second period rolls around, Besser scores early. When they show the replay, I'm like, that's offside. Like, I know it's offside.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about it, though, is when they show the camera angles, you can't see the puck. You have to assume where the puck happens to be because of all of the ice and whatnot that's spraying. And I'm not trying to say it was a bad call, but you know how like, oh, it's got to be definitive and you have to clearly see this. You could not.
No, but you're like, yeah, it was a common sense call, right? And you're like, yeah, that was offside.
But then, you know, Lafferty, takes the puck off the chest, knocks it in, takes a stick in the face or something for good measure, yells at the ref. And then the players on opposing teams started to yell at each other. What I find interesting, though, is that the sort of, I don't know if it's the one thing that caused the second period to become a little more hot, but it was definitely the precursor to some agitation. JT Miller's hit on Rasmus Dahlin. The hit itself didn't immediately incur a penalty. Right? No. The whistle was blown when Owen Power came in and tried to challenge JT to a fight. JT was a willing combatant, knowing that the code requires him to take his punishment for hitting a player, legally or not. But what was interesting in how this transpired is that the referees have communicated to each other, maybe with the linesman. They've now assessed that, okay, Owen Power is going to get 2 minutes for roughing. JT Miller, however, needs to be looked at because he's going to potentially get a 5-minute major. And I presume it was for elbowing. They look at it. And I was watching this and I'm thinking to myself, okay, I don't think that that's a major. When I see the hit and I see it in slow motion, I don't think it's a hit. To me, it's not an elbow. His arm is tucked. Like if anything, you could say it's like hit to the head or something like that. It's not an elbow. His elbow is like where an elbow should be. It's not high. He's not chicken wing. He's doing nothing. But if the league were to say, no, we're going to protect players, contact to an opposing player's head is a penalty, and they consistently applied that, I'm all for it. Yeah, right. It hurts in that situation, but I'm all for it. And if you're going to throw the book at someone for doing it, okay, fine. You know, protect the players. But that's not what this league's about right now.
Yeah.
So they do the review, and then they announce that, oh, upon review, it is not worth a major. And then they say he's getting 2 minutes for elbowing. And I'm like, where's the elbow? You've just watched the replay 20 times. There is no elbow there.
Yeah, I that felt like
blows an my mind.
Appeasement call for sure. You're right. Like if they were like, no, hits the head are majors, like 100% of the time, it doesn't really matter where your elbow is. Like, honestly, I'd be very happy with that. But yeah, it's just the inconsistency. Like, Canucks got away with this, like, you know, almost textbook. This is the drawing of boarding call in the game against Pittsburgh. Like, yeah. It's just not protecting players, especially by the boards. Like, Yeah. If that was their concern, that's not the way you do it.
But that sort of even it up seemed to lead to a problem because Buffalo was not happy. I don't think Rasmus Dahlin returned to the game after that hit. At the end of the game, I don't think they had, what, three defensemen on the bench.
I mean, that was a thing too. It's just like, maybe if you're down a defenseman, like, maybe don't have one of your defensemen start a fight. Like, after the initial fight, there was the Eric Johnson fight. I understand the answer, like, the code, answering the bell, revenge, whatever, but, like, be smart about it.
Yeah. Well, John, even with the fight, though, I don't think Johnson came back to the game, did he? Because they were talking about how he had hurt his hand and he had gone to the dressing room or something like that to tend to his wounds. I mean, maybe he did, but I know it wasn't like they. But regardless, Buffalo was short defenseman. It was a Gergensen's or whatever his name is, was playing on the blue line to at least allow for them to run two defensive pairs. Vancouver did not seem to be able to take advantage of such a situation, even though Gergensen's did try to do them a solid by tipping one into the net. But it felt to me like Buffalo was like, well, okay, if this is what you're going to do to our blue liners, see that guy, Nate Quinn, over there? We're going to abuse the living daylights out of him. And the referees seem to be amenable with that. Like, if you think back to the game against the Penguins when Sidney Crosby is able to draw a penalty without much effort, Quinn Hughes couldn't. And it's not like Quinn dived. Quinn will fight through things and everything, and he was getting zero accommodation.
That's the thing. Like, I get it from a Buffalo perspective of, like, yeah, they have to stand up for their star player. It makes sense. And, like, this is going to happen in the playoffs. But you don't expect playoff officiating to begin in January. Like, it may be that they protect Sidney Crosby because they've just learned how to protect, like, stars that have been in the league for that long. Well,
so what you're telling me is all-star Quinn Hughes, Norris Trophy candidate, Quinn Hughes hasn't quite, you know, paid his quote-unquote dues to get a call yet. Got it.
Literally no idea. Yeah, zero idea. But yeah, I think you've got to do more to stop a game getting out of hand. Like, it could have gotten even worse in Buffalo. If Quinn
but it
wasn't
didn't, so damn intermission fast... Happened.
Yeah, true. But, like, Quinn could have gotten murdered out there, I swear. Oh, yeah, because Darlene came back into the game, didn't he, late on? And maybe that was the sign that they could let up a bit.
I don't recall. I just know that for a good portion of the second period, anytime Quinn Hughes was near a puck, a Sabre was trying to put him through the glass.
Yeah, that was a thing.
And it was not has the puck. It just happens to be near. He might have, you know, already dished the puck away and he was going to get interfered with, slashed, hit, elbowed, roughed, you name it. It was happening.
Yeah. So, yeah, it wasn't an enlightening game to watch from any perspective, I would say. But the main thing is they got through it. And I would say Thatcher Demko, I was more grateful for his contributions against Buffalo.
Okay, that like, save it was in a third period where
middle
I want to say there was like, yeah,
that one? Yeah,
like was it 4 or 5 minutes left in the period? I want to say like it was just hot, complete larceny. Like, I'm genuinely surprised that Demko was allowed to leave the state to make his way to Columbus. Especially at the cross international border.
Which they eventually did a few hours ago.
For our listeners, if you're curious what we're sort of referring to, the Vancouver Canucks weren't able to fly out of Buffalo because of the weather. Essentially, the airport shut down because of snow, winter storm, what have you. They play in Columbus Monday. Today, as you're listening to this, or right, yesterday, or who knows when. And that game is like at 7 a.m. It's 10, but still. The Vancouver Canucks elected today, that being Sunday, to take a bus from Buffalo to Toronto so that they in turn could get on a plane from Toronto and make their way to Columbus.
Yeah, seems kind of counterintuitive, but whatever works.
To go from New York to Ohio, head north.
Yeah. If you want something to work, head back to Canada. No, yeah. That's very harsh. It was a complete gong show over there in Buffalo, so... yeah, apparently San Jose finally made it to Buffalo, and
cool.
Canucks finally made it out of Buffalo, so, yeah. It doesn't bode well for the game, as you say, at the crack of dawn, tomorrow morning, or earlier today as you listen to this, probably. Mm-hmm. But...
Or momentarily, depending on how quick I get the episode out.
Yeah.
We run a real efficient machine here.
And play us on 2.5 speed or something to get through the episode on time. So
as a segue, Canucks in Columbus.
I mean, I felt more confident about it yesterday than I do right now. Obviously, our doubting hasn't served us well. Over the years, Columbus are having a tough old time. Like, they are bottom of their division.
I think you're underselling it there, Anna.
Yeah. They're on the struggle bus, for sure. Like, they have 35 points right now. So, it's not quite half, but it's of Canucks total. But yeah, they're not doing great. So you have to think a tired Canucks team still has enough to get past Columbus, despite the less than ideal preparation.
Yeah, I still give the Vancouver Canucks a win here, but I feel along the lines that you do, there's some concern over the amount of time it took to get from Buffalo to Columbus. There is a component there that doesn't allow for the Vancouver Canucks to settle, get into routine, what have you, and then they play early. It's like, essentially, you get up in the morning. I presume they have some form of breakfast. Lots of oats. I mean, like, mm-hmm. I don't know what they do with this type of situation, because you would hear about players carb loading before a game. They don't really have much time to even do that. And then they play some hockey before they, I presume, then make their way to Vancouver and get a day off, maybe two.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got to have, they really are deserving of rest right now. But yeah, it's a 12 p.m. local time game. Canucks were recently on Eastern time, back to Central, and now it's, but I think it's more the rest thing. The stop-start nature of their journey kind of helped. The bus part kind of helped.
Yeah.
They're eating dinner in an airport rather than a nice restaurant or a hotel kind of helped. I think it's definitely a test, and we shouldn't be saying that for a game against Columbus, but it is. Like, no. How do you respond to adversity?
Yeah. So I'm still 2 points. You are two?
I'm two.
Okay. So then they come home. They get a couple of days before they take on the Yotes on Thursday night. Arizona's in town.
It is the Pride game, Canucks Pride game.
I was not aware of it.
Yes, so they've only really been publicizing it in the last like week or so, and the new logo was revealed, I believe, yesterday. Maybe it was Friday. And designed once again by friend of the show Mio.
Very talented.
Includes our new logo. C4. Yep. Mm-hmm. So. Obviously it's joint second favorite thing she's done. Both the Canucks Pride logos. It looks sick, of course it does. And I'm pleased to see that she's in town for the game. So
oh, cool.
I believe the last one was maybe mid pandemic, so that wasn't able to be a thing. Yeah.
It's I'm a shame though that go. The players won't be wearing the jersey.
Yes, of course. Of course. Like,
I wonder if anyone will be rocking tape.
Hope so. Now that Pride Tape enthusiast Travis Dermott is no longer with the team, I really hope someone takes up that mantle. I hope all the players do. I mean, the standard's been set, right? Like, that's been the case of most Pride jerseys.
I hate to say it, Anna, I don't think all players do. I do believe the Vancouver Canucks have players who would rather not.
Yeah.
As shameful as that might be in my mind, but hey, who am I?
Well, I hope the leaders lead by example, and I hope, like, Quinn does anyway. I mean, it's just, we're not going to get sidetracked talking about this, but, like, just the message that you send to the hockey public, to fans, to media, and to potentially some of your teammates who might be part of that community if you don't, yeah, if you don't show up and support. It's a shame.
2 points?
2 points.
And then the Maple Leafs are in town on Saturday for a 4 p.m. puck drop in Vancouver. Because anytime Montreal or Toronto makes the trip on a Saturday, TV requires that the game be early. I'm not as confident in this one.
Neither. Obviously, the Toronto game in Toronto was not a marquee game for the Canucks. They did not put on their best. So, yeah, I don't love it. I would love for Canucks to beat them just as that sort of showcase that a Leafs game provides, even, and it's even early enough for them to stay awake. Especially as enemy of the show, Why Aren't does have a bet with Frankie Corrado. And if Canucks win, Frankie will change his Twitter avatar to him in a Canucks jersey. So,
I mean, I know we had Frankie on the show.
How he looked best.
But did Frankie ever get a chance to wear a Toronto Maple Leafs jersey in an NHL game?
Yeah. He did. Okay. He didn't play a lot of Toronto games. He played a lot of Marley's games, obviously.
I meant like a Toronto Maple Leafs jersey and a Toronto Maple Leafs game.
Yes, he did.
Not a Toronto and a Toronto.
I can't tell you how many he played, but yeah, not a ton.
Okay. So I was going to say, like, I mean, he got into a situation where a bad coach made bad decisions, and unfortunately for Frankie.
But you're right in thinking that. Like, maybe it should always be him in a Canucks jersey, because
that's where I was getting at.
Yeah. But also, I mean, he's an analyst in his own right, and probably that's his best face to put online. But
sure. Yeah. Speaking of which, we should, knock on Frankie's door and see if he wants to make an annual thing.
Yeah, we should do that. Especially, and let's see how this game turns out first, though.
Yes. Very, very. So if I'm hearing you correct, the Vancouver Canucks do not get 2 points. They don't get one.
I don't think they get one.
Neither do I. I think, unfortunately, being the hater I am, the Vancouver Canucks lose to the Leafs. So that means out of three potential wins, they get two, which arguably is good, all things considered, within the course of the week. I would be happy if they get the W against the Leafs. In fact, you know what? They could lose against Columbus. They could lose against the Coyotes. And if they beat the living daylights of the Toronto, that too is a win.
Yeah, just I agree, honestly.
If they win all three.
Yeah.
Anywho, it'll be interesting to see whether or not we come back to you next week and tell you how much we do or do not know. But regardless, you're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Anna and Chris.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that, because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
So you wrote this in the rundown. When do Canucks become legit? And I have to sort of ask you, what do we mean by this? Do we mean by legitimately a contender in the course of the season that they're currently in, or legitimately a good team, one that can go and string together successful seasons? Which version of legit?
Yeah, I don't mean the second one. I guess I mean when they become a legit contender, because Canucks are, with their win in Buffalo, went to the top of the NHL again. And still people,
temporarily, as it's temporarily reinforced regularly.
Yes, like we think that the league suddenly ends in January. But the way national correspondents talk about the Canucks, it's not as, it's, you know, with pleasant surprise that they are where they are, and that, but not necessarily as they are one of the best teams that in the league that are going to be contending for a cup come June. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, I think it's fair. I mean, what's the pedigree of this team? It's not good. And I do think they need to make some investments before they have that. But yeah, I'm just kind of curious to, like, see how far away you think they are.
I'm so conflicted because their record tells me they're legit. They win games. Yep. They're not the hottest team in the league right now, but they're a hot team. In the last 10, they've won seven games.
They are not Winnipeg. Right?
Like, a 700 team with a record slightly over 700? Interesting. I just, the struggle I have is when I look at this roster is understanding how it is successful, because it doesn't look a lot different from many of the rosters we've seen for years now throughout the Dark Benning era that we went through, right? Like, Benning always had Vancouver in a position where there was one scoring line.
Yeah.
Right. That there was always at least one scoring line, and they always had at least one solid defensive pairing. Now you look at the Vancouver Canucks as a constructor right now, presumptively the Lotto line is the scoring line. Yes. I know that you have, the good boys, or good job guys, or whatever heck it is. man, that doesn't even flow.
Yeah, I prefer you getting it wrong. Yeah. It does reinforce the point that it doesn't work.
As like a scoring line. But really, that seems to be more of a, you know, happy little mistake, to steal the words of Bob Ross, right? Like, cool. It's a pleasant surprise. I'm in this weird space where I'm like, I don't know how it's working, but it is, and so I should embrace it. So I guess to answer your question through the lens of the current season, are the Vancouver Canucks legit? They certainly are. If you were to ask me, you know, please write the steps as to which you came to this answer. I cannot. I'm getting one mark for the right answer and I'm losing nine of them because I can't show the equation to get there.
Yeah. I mean, what I struggle with is like the depth, right? That you just said, like, maybe they have two lines that provide scoring, but that's not really enough, especially when the third line will often be, you know, asked to do their primary role, which is more of a matchup role, and waste time and prevent the opposition from scoring. Like,
they're doing that, though, and
right,
throwing in a goal here and there, too.
But, like, Canucks really haven't had, like, this is a 7-game road trip. Believe me, it's a big test, especially playing New York. And then the New York team's back-to-back like that. That's a big test. But, like, they haven't had the hardest run in terms of opposition, and I think it's going to get a lot harder despite the favorable travel the rest of the way. Canucks are going to face off against some harder opposition, like LA and Winnipeg. Like, those games are going to be really tough. So I just think when the going gets tough, like, who do you rely on for scoring? And, like, when we were talking about Kuzmenko earlier, I just legitimately could not remember his line mates at that time. Like, because I was just like, it's not doing it. Like, Mikheyev hasn't looked like any kind of scoring threat in a long time. Kuzmenko's getting looks, but not good enough ones. Pierre Suter kind of came off his hot streak. Yeah, I definitely think that that's a worry. Because you will need all three lines to go, like, at least three lines to go in terms of offering scoring down the stretch.
Theoretically, if everything that you're discussing starts to go wrong and the wheels completely fall off the bandwagon here, there is, in my mind, enough momentum that the bandwagon still crosses the line and puts the Canucks in a position to still be a serious threat in the playoffs.
I mean,
because teams go through slumps, but they generally break slumps. And I know, depending on when that slump starts, is a problem, but
yeah,
like, we're well past the point of no return. This Canucks team is making the playoffs.
Yeah.
If they don't, this front office has to despite everything that they've done well, there'd have to be drastic changes. You blow something up.
Yeah, yeah. No, and to be clear, I don't think the wheels are going to come off completely. I think there will be some regression over the sort of tougher opponents. It's more of a thing of doing it repeatedly, like night after night in the playoffs type thing, against the same opposition and not getting overrun. Because, like, Buffalo aren't a great team. They're not a good team. But Canucks struggled.
Yeah, but they struggled, but yet still found a way to win.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think it's fair to discount the things that are playing against Vancouver. Presuming how hard it was to get out of Buffalo, it was probably just as hard to get in. It was probably a disruption to the routine. The fact that they were playing early, they're on a long road trip. Like, there's all these factors that I don't think would be fair for us to discount in its entirety. And yet, despite all of it, they got 2 points.
Yeah. And I agree. And I think that's admirable because, like we're saying, the adversity thing, it's how you respond. They responded in Pittsburgh. They responded in Buffalo. It's just whether they have enough to do it night after night through a long playoff stretch. And that isn't to say they can't, but you would think that the deadline would have to provide some interesting news in order for that to happen.
Yeah. Well, I think if there's one thing that'll be handy is the Vancouver Canucks have a week of rest coming up. Because if you've been a Vancouver Canucks fan for the last decade, you know that hardly anyone gets to go to the All-Star game for Vancouver.
Oh, wait.
Is that not happening this season, Anna?
Yeah, I regret to report that half the team are going, including the head coach. It's honestly so fun. And hilarious that it's, five Canucks, 4 Maple Leafs, and then handful of
others. Anna, it is 3 Maple Leafs added to the one who's already going and a handful of Vancouver Canucks. If you've read the headlines correctly, Toronto is acing the entire, whatever, Metropolitan Division team.
Yeah.
And there's a handful of Canucks.
Hometown team, so you kind of be like, well, I hope so. The actual practicalities of setting 5 players maybe isn't the best, but you kind of have to think that the players that are going are smart enough to do it in the most sensible way, prioritizes their recovery and stuff. It's a shame that our sort of core, the whole lotto line and the captain doesn't get any rest, but goaltended either, but yeah. I think it's great to see, and it's definitely another good sort of showcase moment for Vancouver.
Yeah. The Canuck fan vote knows no superior. I mean, when Vancouver Canucks fans are motivated, there's a thing that Canucks Twitter has that no other fan base can do. As disruptive as Canucks Twitter is on a normal day, and when I say Canucks Twitter, I mean Canucks social media, anything that unites them you don't mess with that power.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's one of those things where it's like, Canucks Twitter is so divided at times, but if an outsider tries to attack, they will unite so fast. And yeah, on that note, we didn't mention it earlier, but there was a radio hit from a national writer, Greg Wisniewski. Why do we have all those Eastern European names in national writers? I should learn how to say it. I'm sorry.
I just call him Wish.
Yeah, that's fine. Wish. Mm-hmm. Who is, by the way, really great writer. I've read plenty of his stuff, and he's very smart. But, like, just telling Canucks fans not to get cocky, because that was what had the rest of the league rooting for Boston in 2011. Like, I call BS. Like, that's no way that was the reason. People don't like the West Coast. Like, people don't like Swedes, like, dominating. They don't like the European silky style of hockey. Triumphing over meat and potatoes, good, honest, hard-hitting hockey. Like, people don't like that. And Vancouver's too nice a city. We have sushi and we're athleisure. Like, it was never gonna be the people's champion. Like, people don't like BC, and that's kind of okay. At least we now have a legit reason for it.
Whatever. I have every right to be cocky, because I've gone a decade where cocky wasn't a word in the vocabulary. So, as we just pointed out, Vancouver Canucks are sending in an entire line and coach to Toronto. Petey gets to go in the All-Star or skills competition. It is possible that to Brock or JT or Quinn could somehow magically get in as a fan vote. Cause I think fans get to pick two more. We know that the Oilers are not going to be voting for McDavid or Draisaitl because they're both in. So just saying, Edmonton fans.
I do have a feeling that people are tired of voting now. And so they're just like, the battle's won. But yeah, speaking of all stars, you see the jerseys,
The Doritos bags.
Yeah.
So again, this is dropped in C4 Discord, friend of the show, Jay dropped that it's a meme that's been produced elsewhere. But if you look at different bags of Doritos and compare them to the divisional all-star jerseys, you'll be like, oh, hey, I totally see where that, you know, design inspiration may have come from. And if it didn't, which it probably didn't, it's just a coincidence.
Yeah, fun coincidence. Honestly, it just made me think of 90s Nickelodeon kind of graphics. Like, that might be, like, from Ed, Ed, and Eddie, or
okay,
some show like that.
If Austin Matthews gets slimed, I'm all for the skills competition changes, honestly, okay?
They should do that. That's fun. Maybe slime is, like, copyrighted getting slimed, but...
But if it, maybe there's a Nickelodeon crossover Nickelodeon, we're not quite sure on.
Didn't they the sponsor NFL? Well, like, there was, like, Nickelodeon games?
They have. And then, like, there's, like, full-on animation and all that. Like, the NFL and Nick are connected because of, I think, Nickelodeon's owned by a Disney, I think, now.
Sure.
I think. Or, anyhow, long story short, one of the already rights holders owns Nick. The Juice. What are your thoughts on the Juice that, you know, Bruce dropped? I don't quite understand the context as to which it came out. I presume they must have been talking on the broadcast. It was the NHL Network broadcast, but they were talking about Quinn Hughes. And Bruce Boudreau said that last season, before he was let go, obviously, someone in the organization had wanted Bruce to convert Quinn to become a center. Mm-hmm. Now, one, I find it so surreal that that type of information only squeaks out now. Okay. Two, thank goodness that didn't happen, though, as Nexus says in C4 Discord, Canucks' best center. And if Quinn turned into a center, there is a possibility he would have been. But way to go on the blue line.
Yeah, he certainly would be a great center. Like, he would be a great anything. He probably would make a decent goalie, too, or at least for his size.
But, you know, this had some legs. And people are like, wow, like, who would that have been? Like, that is so weird. Like, yes, the Vancouver Canucks have needed, you know, depth in the middle of the ice. But, like, why do you cannibalize the first piece of a solid blue line you've had in forever to do that? And then Rachel Dory had amplified it by retweeting and saying it wasn't the owner, which then I actually hadn't think it would have been ownership that would have said, hey, here, you should make this guy a center. That just doesn't in my mind to be the ownership sort of modus operandi here. But that then reinforces, well, who?
Yeah.
Anyhow, never a dull day in Vancouver Canucks land.
There really isn't. Do you have a theory?
I don't know.
No.
I don't understand the logic of it. Like, I'm not denying the, you know, truth of the matter. Like, if Bruce is saying it, Rachel has amplified it, I will accept that there is truth to that story. The problem is that, why would that make sense? You know, we've seen players converted, and there are a variety of reasons as to why it will occur. But the Vancouver Canucks, if they remove Quinn from the blue line, are you going to tell me that the Vancouver Canucks is a good team without him there? Because, like, this is last year. Who else was there? Does OEL magically turn into what the Vancouver Canucks thought they were getting originally? Does the chaos giraffe, you know, become not the chaos giraffe? Like, to me, you're essentially accepting that you're a bad team and you have no future if you did that.
Yeah, I would say that, like, the defensive core was not in a good enough shape for, like, Quinn to be moved out, that's for sure. Yeah. It seems like a bonkers idea. I don't know who would be behind it. Obviously, yes, we are used to Francesco sticking his nose in where it's not wanted.
But that, I mean, but Rachel said it wasn't ownership.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Before she'd even said that, did it even cross your mind that it could have been ownership?
I wasn't thinking ownership necessarily. I was thinking, like, when she said that, I was just like, oh yeah, it would be a Francesco thing to do. But you would think that at least it might be someone who has more of a, like, even if they don't have a full-on clue, they would be have more to do with the day-to-day running of the team.
You know what? Maybe it was Dale Tallon. I mean, I'm not trying to say it was. I honestly don't know. But, like, if you think, like, what is the – if we're talking about the front office, there are six names associated with the front office in Canucks.com. You got Rutherford, Alvin, Castonguay, Granato, Johnson, and Tallon.
Yeah, I don't know. You wouldn't think that, like – I mean, one, Ryan Johnson is just, like, development, like, so development-focused. You wouldn't think it's – yeah, you know what? I'm not going to start going name by name, but, like, it's a bonkers idea, but it does kind of highlight that the Canucks
are not. The reason I say Dale Tallon is Dale's done some crazy things.
For sure. For sure. So, like, why not? It could be Dale. But, like, it does kind of show that the Canucks are really not that far away from the Chaos team, from, like, the banter team of the NHL. Like, the Jim Benning years were brutal, but, like, the nonsense didn't stop when Jim lost his job. There was still some more nonsense left. Less nonsense, but still some nonsense.
I'm looking at the names of, like, people here, and, I mean, unless it's, like, some weird, like, side conversation from, you know, Ed McLaughlin, the executive vice president, general manager of Rogers Arena, just saying, hey, you know, I wonder, like, to me, that's not a valid conversation if that's what Bruce is referring to. And I don't think, like, that's the case. Yeah, like Daniel and Hank, you know.
Well, he's so good that he could be a center. I mean, I could see them saying that, but that's not the same.
It's so weird. Anyhow, Anna, it's been a week. We're going to be back in another. But we've reached that point of an episode where we drop final words of wisdom for our listeners. Do you have any this week?
Mainly just I was really excited to see Mio make another Pride logo. It's always great that it's going to be like an in-community, right? Like whether it's an Indigenous artist making the Indigenous logo. And then, like, yeah, you... an artist from the Asian community making the Lunar New Year logo. Like, that's what you want. You want it to be authentic and come from a highly skilled artist and someone that knows what they're talking about. So, and the fact that Mio's, like, knocked out of the park twice, I think is so cool. And it's great that she gets to see it in person, and I only wish it was going on the ice on for Walmart's, but... There we go. Hockey ruins everything.
I've done some further research here, Anna. Robert Bartley, executive chef, wants Quinn to be a center.
Yeah, I'm fair
play. Take it to the bank.
Yeah.
Take it to the bank.
That's all that.
I think he's also the guy that introduced us Steamer's hot dogs at the in the barn too, right?
Which was a good idea. So, like, maybe he was on a roll.
Right. Exactly. Final words, stay warm. The, you know, Arctic outflow has left Metro Vancouver. It still remains cold. If you happen to be a listener who happens to be in, other parts of Canada where it remains cold, stay warm. We will get through this. Just remember, in only 6 months' time, it'll be stupid hot because climate change is real and extremes are the new norm. But we've got to that point where it's time to run through the nitty-gritty of how you can keep in touch with us. And to do so, we are at the C4 Podcast on Twitter or X or whatever the heck it's called these days, and at the Real C4 Podcast on Threads. Anna's on Threads now. Say hi to Anna, A4C03 on Threads. You can find C4 Discord at discord.io/C4podcast, and you can see our entire back catalog-ish on C4podcast.com. As always, the ads that you hear at the start or the end of each show have nothing to do with us. We do not support them, whether they say that we do or not. And we would love for our current hosts to get in touch with us. So if they're listening, please do. And Party Foul to have added 8 ad spots to the end of last week's episode. But I caught on to you and I removed them all. So jokes on you. If you as a listener, though, do want to support our show and help us cover the cost to record, you can head to support.c4podcast.com, which will in turn forward you over to Buy Me a Coffee, or as Anna and I like to call it,
Buy Me a Pint.
And there you can drop either a one-off donation to help quite literally buy Anna and I a pint if and when we ever get together again, or two, you can contribute on a monthly or annual basis to support the show. And anyone who does commit to an annual subscription will get themselves an exclusive C4 podcast sticker. Very exclusive, except for the buttload of stickers I gave to Anna. So if you happen to be walking through the UK and you see someone with a C4 sticker, either Anna knows them or they stole it from her.
Which is possible. Ask. It gets rough on the streets of Broccoli.
Yeah. But on behalf of Anna, myself, Chris, and the entire podcast team, which really it's just the two of us, we out.